This is HPR episode 2066 entitled, HPR Community News for June 2016, and is part of the series, HPR Community News. It is hosted by HPR volunteers, and is about 97 minutes long. The summary is, Dave and Ken review the last month without talking about Brexit much.
This episode of HPR is brought to you by anhonesthost.com. Get 15% discount on all shared hosting with the offer code HPR15. That's HPR15. Better web hosting that's honest and fair at anhonesthost.com.
Hello, everybody. This is HPR Community News for June 2016. And in this show, it's a regular show put on every month for the HPR community to give you a little idea about what's going on the mailing list and quick run through some of the shows that you might have missed, etc., etc., etc. Joining tonight is Dave. How are you, Dave?
Hi, Ken. I'm great. Thank you. Hi, everybody.
We're a bit late starting this recording due to the fact we had a 20-minute discussion on the Brexit vote, which we won't pollute you here with.
This could be the longest show ever if we're not careful.
Very, very true. Very, very true. But very interesting times. By the time you hear this in a few years' time, you'll wonder what we were all talking about. But anyway, this show is HPR. Itself is a community podcast network, which means the people who submit the shows are the people who listen to the shows. So if you're listening to the show and you ever thought of contributing a podcast somewhere or you want to start your own podcast, feel free to use HPR as a springboard to do such a thing, because that is exactly what we're here for, is to help people share knowledge and get into podcasting. The reason I'm going we probably picked up quite a few listeners due to the fact we were nominated for the Technology People's Podcast Award. And we would like to congratulate Hack5 on being the worthy winners in that section. Big shout out to all of those guys. And thank you very much to everybody who nominated us and everybody who voted for us. So as part of this show, we will start by introducing the new hosts. Dave, do you want to do that?
Yes, indeed, if you like. We have three new hosts. I had to do a double take there because we've got one very long name. We had Handsome Pirate, and we had Tony Hughes, whose title includes AKA Tony H1212, which causes the speech synthesizer a bit of a problem. But and we had Todd Mitchell.
So congratulations to those three hosts on becoming a podcaster, although that's a bit moot for Tony, who's had been on many podcasts before. And Handsome Pirate, I was shocked and stunned to find that this was his first show. But there you go. So the first show was what is turning out to be a bit of a series for just me, and it is discussing beer tasting. And the first beer was Laguntus Maximus. Am I missing that? IPAs. Do you like an IPA,
yes.
Dave?
Pardon?
Do you want to correct my pronunciation first?
I've heard it pronounced Lagunitas. I used to listen to a podcast where they did a lot of beer chat, and that was one that was often mentioned, and that was the way they pronounced it, but they were in Arizona, so I don't know if that means anything.
I've never had this beer, never been exposed to it. Maybe it's a...
I've always wanted to try it, but it doesn't come to this side of the Atlantic.
I must say, though, I don't like IPAs, to be honest.
I do, actually. I quite enjoy the hoppiness of them, but it's a personal taste, obviously.
Indeed. Okay, that was a good show. Liked the series. Would like to have a show about reviewing beers, what, how you should do a show on reviewing beers. That would be, I know it's a bit meta, but I know a lot of people would, or namely myself, would love to have an excuse to have a beer. And I'm not having a beer. I'm recording a HPR episode. Would be an excellent excuse.
It's true, actually. I would like to be able to describe beers to people, not necessarily on a show, but I just say things like, oh, well, it was very nice. It had a quite bitter, or it was hoppy, or something like that. But, you know, a bit more vocabulary would be good.
Exactly. So, cool. You're also in China, it turned out, later on.
Excellent. I noted that, too. It's very interesting. I'd like to hear more about that.
Mm. So the following day, we had NY Bill. Thank you, Bill. Power supplies used for electronics work. Very nice episode. And there are some comments here. Basically, what he describes, what sort of power supplies you should have, and has given instructions about which would be the best ones to have. As I am getting into electronics myself, this was an extremely interesting show for me. And I have a question, and that is, why does my power supply need to have 0 volts on it, which he mentioned in the show? Because surely you can just turn it off and then that would be 0 volts. Or am I missing something? And my Bill can come back and answer that. Better yet, do a show.
Don't ask me, I'm afraid. Now, that was interesting. I'd also like to get into that sort of stuff. So I'd like to know more about that.
And he, in the comments, an ex friend of his shot him a line, so that was nice to see.
Yes, indeed. And my Bill came back and said, shoot me an email sometime.
Dave, some other bash tips for some reason has been removed from my MP3 player, or sorry, OGG player, because it's an OGG player. But I will download it again and listen to it. So I've just been going through the show notes tonight, which are very detailed as always, because your shows require a full attention on the train. I can't just listen to them every place. And then I went back and I couldn't find the show again. And then I went and downloaded the last episode you had, which was Learning Said, which I hadn't listened to. So I listened to that thinking I caught up with myself. And now I realize that I completely missed this one. But I'm just going through this and there are massive amount of things in it. So what I'll do is I'll put my comments into, sorry, massive amount of things I'm finding useful in it. And I'll put comments in the next episode and we can discuss it then, if that's okay.
Yeah, it's fine. I don't know whether to apologize for making them so dense, but I do them because if I were at the stage I was when I started to do them and somebody had done them for me, I would have been delighted because these are things I like to know about. So I just reckon that if I do them, maybe somebody else will. Probably, yeah, exactly. That's only like 1% of our audience, but even so, maybe they're enjoying it.
No, I do listen to these, and after each and every one of the shows that you've done so far, my scripts have been modified, and I've gone even back and edited some of the scripts. I've even stopped using sequence 1 to 10, Dave.
well done. No, I do the same. I find myself actually having learned in detail, because you have to learn these things to talk about them, I think, oh, right, that's how it works. Now I'll use it. And I do, you know, things like process redirections and things of that sort, process substitution is, yeah, just brilliant things. So, yeah.
It's amazing the power that's just at our fingertips and we just take it for granted.
Bash is hell of a complicated thing. There's a lot more in it than you'd expect from a scripting language, actually.
Yeah, exactly. Also, I can tell the age of my scripts by how what particular time I started using particular things. You know,
yes.
If I'm still using backticks, I haven't found out about brace expansion. You know, stuff
well,
like that.
Yeah. Well, the same here. I mean, I'm learning and applying as I go. So it's just that I've been in telling people what I've found as I go along, that's all. So, I've looked at old scripts. Why the hell did I do that? And, gosh, I know better ways of doing that now.
Yeah, still, get it done first. That's how we learn. And then you can improve later on. The next one was HPR Community News, which is on the Monday. And then we had NeoFetch, which is Dave Morris. This was a JWP podcast talking about NeoFetch 1.5 to display system information. I'd never heard about this tool, actually.
No, me neither. No, it looked quite interesting.
So 5150 says, even though it isn't a binary for the OpenSUSE repos, installation was easy as downloading the source from GitHub and unpacking the archive and running sudo make install. So that's pretty cool. There's a few of these actually out there for getting data on your system.
Yeah, I know. I don't know enough about them, to be honest. I'd never spend the time to go into them, so it's good to have pointers like this.
I usually use them when I'm shopping for new laptops. I'll put them on a USB stick and then go into the computer shops and just try them out.
I'm going to just step away for a second, Ken, because I don't know if you can hear my cat in the same room demanding to go out. So
okay, far ahead. I'll go grab a cup of tea. And through the wonders of truncated silence removal, we'll be back in a moment. Okay, okay. You back?
I'm back, yep.
So the following day, we had Whobot chatbot.
I read that as Hubbot, but I don't really know how it's supposed to be.
It more than likely is, Dave, because my role here is to butcher every pronunciation possible, as you well know.
Yes. Go on.
Now, this was kind of interesting because of the connections that you can make to it to different systems. But I'm not sure if I'd use it.
No, I would love to play around with this, but I wouldn't know quite what use to put it to other than saying, oh, look, I've made a bot or I've configured a bot, and then try and attach it to some IRC channel and everybody shouting at you.
Excuse me. This is the person who's got a lighting up LEDs when somebody uploads a show. Surely you could use something like this to trigger any time the word HPR is put onto the IRC channel or something.
Now there's a thought. Right. Okay. No, I was thinking of more of being the nuisance of it. Because some of the ones that exist on IRC channels I frequent can be a little bit annoying at times.
But it uses a lot of XMPP, do I even say? Twitter. There could be something there, actually. Could be something there for us.
Yeah. It seems okay. worth digging into, anyway.
Thanks, John. Keep them coming. And the next one was Nightwises. Hold on, did we get any comments?
No.
So the next one was Nightwises, my Raspberry Pi home server. And he basically described my home setup, pretty much, except for one or two command line apps, which I was... The CLI word processing, wasn't aware of that myself.
Yeah.
And I tend to use Screen myself.
Yeah. So similar things here. I don't use my Raspberry Pi when I'm out and about because I'm not out and about very much. So I don't need it for that. But I can see the usefulness of it if you're out on the road a lot. I did actually do this years ago when I had a Shiba plug. Do you remember the Shiba plug?
I do indeed. Mine... I got burned with one of them too. Not physically, but when they...
Mine's still alive, actually. It's just it had a disk on it, and the disk failed, and I haven't got around to rebuilding it with a different disk. But I used to use that when I was a consultant for keeping stuff in a Git repository that I could upload to my clients and stuff.
Yeah, they're really handy. I use it for I use it as a stepping stone to get. I have one on the outside of my network. And then I connect into that, and then from there I can connect to other machines because then I have the permissions and the IP blocking and stuff done.
No, but there's some great stuff. And as always, Nightwise points us at things that we might not have noticed otherwise. Certainly did in this case, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, indeed. Pretty cool. Shall we go through the comments? Do you want to start?
Yep, okay. Server setup is PITFD says server setup, dear Nightwise, great contribution, would like to have one. As I'm not well versed in server stuff, would you mind elaborating on server setup, maybe pointing out a good tutorial? Thank you.
And I would just say to that, drop us an email here at admin@hpr, put a comment in the episode, PITFD, what exactly you would want Or do you like a installation instructions of each of the applications he put in, or just general server setup? Because out of the box, the Raspberry Pi pretty much comes ready to rock.
Yeah. It's just a case of choosing what you want and installing it to largely, I think, isn't it?
Yeah, maybe it's that bit. But if you can clarify exactly what you were, what you'd like, we're more than happy to do shows on that. We'll put it on to the requested show ideas thing. Okay, comment number two was from John the Man Culp. Center IM great episode, especially liked the rundown of the CLI apps. Got Center IM running on the server now. Thank you.
Cool. And John also said in comment number three, CLI word processing. I've been trying out that CLI word processor word grinder, and it's pretty cool. Once I figured out that you had to use the native .wg format to start out with and then convert it over to ODT or HTML, it worked great. I like how it does a nice clean HTML conversion without any styling at all. That's nice, actually. You've got very basic paragraph styles for headings and quotations, a couple of basic character formatting options. It's just right. Thanks for the tip. Quite, sounds interesting. I must look at that in more depth myself. Yeah.
And then we had Lander. Me too. I also find myself SSH'd into my Pi as my daily grinder. Glad to know I'm not alone. Love the list of apps and have saved it for a re-listen. Inspiring. That, I can just basically do a plus one on that one.
Yes. No, that's...
No, because even though I have my own Pi and I've got my own specific set of stuff running on it, it's always great to hear what somebody else is using for it.
Yeah, I quite agree.
They're
quite
so
agree.
Cheap. Like now you've got, seriously, I've got the Raspberry Pi 3, right? It's as powerful as my wife's desktop computer.
Yes. I have an HP ProLiant thing that everybody was buying at one time, a little desktop server, which has got a dual core processor in it, and I think the Pi 3 is more powerful than that now. So I'm just wondering whether to shift everything over to the Pis, to be honest.
And also just the power consumption, from a purely environmental point of view, having a Pi is just. I turned off my old. Old server that I've been running for years. Not only is it better for the environment, the price of our electricity went down because we had the electric company saying, "Are you aware that you're more expensive? You're using more electricity than most of your neighbors."
Ooh.
Which here actually usually has the police coming because you have the weed farms growing.
Yes.
I must do a HBR episode on that sometime because it's quite funny. Funny for the people who owns the houses, but it's interesting.
Grow lights in the attic and stuff like that. Yeah.
Oh, everywhere. Like they just take over the house and then they'll run, they'll steal the electricity from the lights outside. And there was a guy got electrocuted there. I shouldn't laugh. It's not funny, but the irony of it hit me. His basement flooded and they used like, you know, power cords and heat lights and stuff, and he went down and got electrocuted because his cellar had flooded and he was trying to save his plants. When it snows here, right, they have the police helicopters go up because then the helicopters fly around the housing estates and any of the houses with where the snow is melted on the roof, then they go raid the houses.
Oh, my goodness me. Because they were growing stuff in there.
They grow weed, and the stuff goes into the walls, and you essentially have to completely demolish the house and just completely rebuild it. It's just horrible what goes on.
Wow.
Yes, drugs are not legal in the Netherlands. Don't let anyone fool you about that. You're allowed to. They won't prosecute you for, I think, 50 euros or less, but anything above that, they're constantly trying to catch him. Anyway, 2050, developing black and white film. Black and white film is actually pretty easy to develop. Follow along as I do. Handsome Pirate. That was a nice episode, actually. What would you call them? I'm trying to think of for our series, Dave, series classification, well, a environmental one, a sitting over the shoulder one.
I've tended to call them ambient, but I don't think ambient, that's quite the right word.
Yeah, I get you.
Yeah, ambient usually means you're just listening to the environmental sounds and stuff. I suppose it is, actually, because the microphone's just sort of following along as he does his development. So
yeah,
actually, quite, I like that. Yeah, I liked it for that reason, as particularly. I just wish he'd put a picture or two of the equipment, because I think he was using one of those drum 35mm drum loader thingies in a developing tank. I have one of those because I did have a little go at this myself years and years ago.
Uh-huh.
And you basically put your film in the end of this spiral, and then you rotate the two the top and the bottom of it. They move just a little bit in relation to one another, and they ratchet the film through. You have to do this in the dark, obviously. Mm-hmm. I did it. I've got a dark bag, a changing bag for that purpose. And then you do your development inside that tank once you've closed it up. But you put the spool in the tank and then you close it. Anyway, he explained it better than I did. But yeah, if you haven't had experience of that, it might have been a little hard to visualize. But still,
as luck would have it, I've just seen a video, YouTube video of a guy restoring archive film, you know, that people send in from the 50s and, you know, 40s. And he specializes in recovering it. And so it was very similar. You know, the stuff he was talking about seemed very similar to that. But you know, okay.
Follow-up episodes.
Handsome Pirate, and a distinct lack of R's and swashbuckling as well, I must say.
Timber shivering at all.
Scurvy lads. Clinton Roy said, it was a lovely episode. Thanks, smiley face. So, very nice. I always like these shows, you know. It's like you're sitting on a chair, a high stool, with a like a bar stool with a cup of coffee, just listening to the shows. That, you know, when especially John Culp's Garage episodes and stuff, you know, you're just following along.
Yeah. You hear the bird song around you and stuff. Yeah, it could be nice.
And it's always these ones tend to be the ones that get people into listening to HPR. Like last month, I heard a guy talking to a guy, and he said he was into wild water swimming. Oh, well, HPR have done an episode on that. Have they now? And went and had a listen. So, yeah, pretty cool.
Very good.
My Linux Journey by Tony Hughes. This was interesting, wasn't it?
Yes, Tony's had some interesting experiences, hasn't he?
Tony is a nice guy, in fact. So, yeah.
Yeah, he's always incredibly busy doing things at odd camps. He's
for the community,
taking a lot of pictures too. He's a very keen photographer, I think.
Yeah.
So yeah,
mostly good, Ubuntu,
good to have him on board.
Yeah.
He's had a long and complicated journey, I think.
Yeah.
X Ubuntu or Zubuntu. He's been using, hasn't he?
Yeah. Okay. Next day, we had a nerdy conversation with Lyndon about technology. I ran this one subsequent to listening to it. I sent it off to, there's a cleanup place. So there, if you had trouble listening to this episode, you might want to download the latest version. I've cleaned it up a bit. But it was a fantastic chat. I loved this episode.
Yeah, I listened to this 3 times, actually, because I needed... I didn't have a problem with the sound, and I think I grabbed it as it came out. But
Still, I listen to it on the bus where there's a lot of sound, and occasionally if things are quite hard to listen to, I paid to have it. There's a service in Germany that you can send sound to, and they will clean it up for you and send it back.
Okay. No, it's what the job that Lyndon is currently doing sounded most intriguing.
Oh, my God,
I would love to have heard more about
that. Photos and the...
camera traps in the Serengeti.
Oh, man, hello.
Wow.
And we need, I was thinking, there's shows here. I'm on the show on that. That's a series right there.
And brilliant. She codes in Perl. I was pleased to hear she likes to use Perl, which is amazing.
And Logo was my first programming language, Dave. Did you know that?
Oh, right.
I've completely forgotten about that.
Yes, I've used it. I haven't. It Basic was probably the first thing I ever used. No, Alcohol 60 actually was the first thing I ever used. But and the comment about R popped up into my head because my daughter, doing a biology degree, has been taught, started to use R for quite a lot of her stuff.
Yeah, that seems to be bubbling around there, doesn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, I had a look at it with her, and it looks really good, actually. It's very powerful and not that hard to cope with, but it's extremely powerful. But yeah, I'd like to hear more from Lyndon.
Do you want to read the comments?
Yep, he had a comment from Gordon Ark. I think it would be, good listen. I enjoyed this episode. The How I Got Into Computers / Linux sections were fun. If my small town 1970s Southern High School had Logo programming books, I would have been delighted. And to this day, Logo is my favorite way to draw.
Awesome. And it's nice to see Sigflop doing well as well. So that's always good.
Yeah, yeah, it was a really, really nice, good interview, actually. It was really, nice to listen to. Yeah.
More of these type of conversations. Thank you, Sigflop. Our elite HBR episode. What was it? Our elite episode. Sigflop happened to do that as well. So, private joke. Okay. 2053, my second HBR beer cast. Just me. And this time, Old Fog. Old what?
Foghorn, I think it is.
Old Foghorn, yeah. I don't like these episodes because now there's beer I can't try. That's a bit unfair, isn't it?
Well, that's right. I like the punchiness of the length and everything, and the talk about it is just right. But I want to know where to buy these and try.
No. What they should do is, anybody who does a beer podcast has to ship a sample to me and you, Dave, and then we'll know if it's actually true, because you could be making this stuff up. How can we even check?
Absolutely.
Yep. However, so just me, you're going to have to send, drop us an email, and we'll send you our shipping instructions.
Yeah, right.
Excellent. 5150, who himself has contributed more than one episode on beer. Good choice. Literally my favorite mass-produced beer. Oh, he a compliment and a slag at the same time. I reviewed it back in my old pod brew days. I don't see it often here, and it's kind of spendy when it is. Okay. But as I said, Dave, if you're only going to have one beer a month, surely that beer should be a good beer.
Absolutely. Couldn't argue with that.
My bladder configuration. Sorry. Oh, I was just thinking I need to go to the toilet now. That's the last thing this show needs.
Well, I think John's anticipated all the jokes now, because he does pronounce it bladder when he's talking to it.
Very good. Very good. Anyway, it's part of the accessibility series, and I like the way he's doing it, doing a Dave Morris approach to starting at the beginning and working his way through, which is excellent. And I am so close to doing some of these things, because for some reason my fingers refuse to type words, even when I talk to them saying you're spelling that wrong. They continue to type it incorrectly 3 or 4 times in a row. Anyway.
Yes. I have the same problem, of course. I'm also developing RSI in my hand, so it would be quite nice to be able to fall back to this stuff at some point. So yeah, brilliant stuff.
And just walking into the house and going, computer, put on a cup of tea. Computer, destroy planet. Which planet? Not this one. Bit funny now, lack of oxygen. Amunzip. Dave, help me.
I pronounce it in my head as Amunizp, but I think it's there's a name in there, Muniz, a Spanish name or something like that.
Anyway, my apologies goes out to the commenter for butchering their names. Point
and,
being
and
that,
mine for following as well.
Point being that is my job here. Headless. Would this work for headless computers? I mean, opening and closing mind test server running on a single board computer.
To which John says, Probably. Yeah, I think so. I'm pretty sure that Jezra uses this on a headless computer in his house. You might go back and listen to my interview with Jezra from episode 1284 and see what he says about it.
It has to. I see no reason why I wouldn't.
No, neither do I, really. That's the sort of thing I'd be tempted to do, I have to say.
Yeah, exactly. Cool. Next day was the GNU Nano Editor thanking JWP, who got annoyed at you criticizing his choice in editors.
It was all a ploy to get another show out of
that's right
JWP.
Easy to rise JWP.
So there was no criticism of Nano. It was merely that I want an editor that has functionality. I did definitely say that because I went back and listened and wrote down what I said. I prefer to be able to use a proper editor, is what I said. But by which I mean one which has functionality. Nano's a bit short on. It's good for moving about and typing stuff, but if you want to go to, every line. See, the thing I normally do is I go and edit. First thing I do is when I'm setting up a Pi is go and edit the sudo as file. So you type vi sudo. And then I do YYP to cut out the line that's there for Pi and change the CW on the account name. Now doing that in Nano, how do you cut and paste and then edit?
Control
and then change
Y, Control K, Control D. There's also cut and paste in Nano.
Yes.
So basically, it's not good because you don't know how to do the things that you do in VI, Dave. Admit it.
There is some of that, yeah.
Yeah.
To be fair, there is an element of that.
What we need, Dave, is a VI series, and we also need a Nano series.
Well, that would be good, yes.
But
yes,
we definitely do not need an Emacs series, because nobody wants to... All right, I'm deliberately rising people. Yes, we also need an Emacs series.
Yes. There are other editors as well. There's Kate and
I use Kate every day.
And awesome and so on and so forth. There's many more. But now okay. I just want something with a bit more power. That's all.
The commenter whose name we butchered earlier also said +1 for Nano, but a bit disappointed that it is in Facebook. I just use it and like it, but not enough to join Facebook.
And 0xf10e said
who still hasn't told us how we're supposed to pronounce that.
no, so we just keep on butchering it or whatever. -1 for Facebook too. Nice show, but dude, that was some really bad noise. I think John was recording through his laptop mic or something.
Yeah, perhaps.
You probably meant Nano is an editor for normal people. I use VI style key bindings in my shell, but I've yet to notice to be imaginary. Yes, I'm not quite sure how to parse that, but his shell is not imaginary, I think it means, anyway. Or he himself is not imaginary. Anyway, he says, -1 for Facebook from me too. Nano should be careful not to be kicked out of GNU when RMS hears about this.
And Tony Hughes with a second interview with a young hacker. Gotta love these shows. It is awesome.
Yeah.
Interview of the makerspace in the Northwest UK.
This was Blackpool.
Blackpool Lug, makerspace. Yeah.
Yeah. And where Big Les P goes, Les Pounder's stamping ground as well. So yeah, very, very cool. Very able young fellow who was being interviewed there.
Might be a bit ambitious starting his own Linux distro, but hey, other people have.
Yeah, go for it, I say.
And Tony posted the links which you put into the show. And do you want to read the next comment?
Yes. Oh, yeah, the first two comments were dealt with, really comments to us, I think, weren't they? So John Culp says, excellent, I love this. I wish he'd gone into more detail about his Python library, but I salute him for having created one in the first place. Great stuff.
It is. Very cool. Very cool. Okay, next day we had Dodo Dummy on Oath. Is this steel cut Oath thing is turning into a series in itself? We put it into cooking now, I see.
I think I did that, did I?
I've
been going through and joining things into series. But yeah. Yeah, well, you know.
So, it's a good again, subject. When HPR stuff turns up that is of interest to hackers, and you would not think it.
I found myself trying to describe HPR to people in the recent past, and I say, oh, yeah, we do all sorts of technical stuff. And, oh, this week we did a one on cooking steel-cut oats. And they go, what? And but yeah,
it's, those are the ones that tend to sell it to people. I don't know. I've been thinking of doing a short, catchy Twitter thing, or the short videos, a short podcast. What is HPR? Because it is very difficult. I would like to put on the thing what HPR is, because what is HPR to you? It's different to every person. So
yeah. It reflects. It's a community of hackers. And the things that get submitted reflect that community. So, it's...
Yeah, but even that, it's a community of hackers, conjures up images for people, so...
Well, yeah. No, that hacker thing is always a contentious element, but,
It's our word, and we're keeping it. Thank you very much.
Absolutely.
Luke said, steel-cut oats. Sadly, steel-cut oats are really hard to find in UK supermarkets, as everywhere is just stocked rolled oats. You can order online, but so expensive compared to rolled. Has that been your experience, Dave?
Yes. I'm not sure if this is Luke, who I communicate with on GNU Social, because I did have a conversation with him about this. And I did manage to buy what they call pinhead oats in the UK. In a supermarket, but it's in a tin and it's quite expensive. I think it's more common in Scotland. In fact, it was made in Scotland, so that might have something to do with it.
Okay, following day we had in beverages section, which I see you've been doing some work on the series. So this is a 14th beer podcast. I love this. Just Me is fitting right in here with HPR. First episode and then the 14th episode, and the other 10 are coming, which brings joy to my heart. Java Head beer. So if you want to brew your own, here's another way to start home brewing. Very good.
Yes, I thought it was going to be a brew dog beer when I saw the text, and then realized that it wasn't, but so it's sort of two beer related comments for one here.
Yeah. Okay, actually, that might be a way of getting people to have similar beers if you share your beer recipes online. And like the Beer Review Club. Might be a thing.
The BrewDog guys started life in the university I used to work for. So in my dreams, I think, maybe pop down there and spot them one of these times and interview them, but I don't think they hang around here anymore.
Yeah. More tech, less magic, Todd Mitchell. And this was a very good show about getting kids into, just basically a general all around. I had a few comments about this. The one thing I would say is that limit the amount of screen time kids do have, because it is shown to increase short-sightedness in children. There's been a spike in the number of children requiring reading glasses in the last few years, according to Science Friday's episode on the topic recently. But other than that, I don't think you need to be particularly worried about making sure that your kids experience the same things that you did when you were grown up, because everybody is unique and, you expose them to stuff. Because my introduction to tech was as a result of my brother taking stuff apart, finding out how it worked, and then just going reading a book. And then I would be left... After my mother went ballistic with him, I would be left trying to put it back together, not having known how it was. And so I built up a large skill base of fixing stuff without, and there's no way I want to reproduce that particular thing. So yeah, it's hard to know.
Yeah. I know it's been a subject to debate in my family. my kids sometimes say, oh, I wish I'd had the opportunities you had, meaning that I used to play outside a lot, so I was always coming in with, you know, found a frog or a newt or an ant's nest or something, much to my mum's delight, and saying, oh, I wish we could do that. But, well, you could. It's just that they didn't. And, you know, they were encouraged to a certain extent to do that. And it's just that they had different priorities than I did. I didn't have so much to play with in, compared to what they do.
But I mean, I know I heard my grandmother say that about my parents, you know, the, you had so much stuff to play with compared to us, you know.
So as you say, it's not a simple formula, is it? It's make sure you don't close off any opportunities.
Absolutely.
So basically, they make their own way in these things.
I've been trying to get my kids to do, you know, electronic stuff and whatever for ages, and then they're just not interested. And then all of a sudden, I said, okay, we're going to do some electronic stuff, and they spend the whole day, and they're happy doing it. And now they want to fix. I have a Fix Me box here. And I've got a Hack Me box here, so like a big plastic container that would put in stuff that we never keep broken toys around the house, right? So we always either fix them or they have to be recycled. And if it's fixable, then it goes into the Fix Me box. And if it isn't, it goes into the Hack Me box. So they just decided now today to take out the Hack Me box and replace the LEDs and some of the stuff that wasn't working. And okay. Fair enough. You might want to clean the table first and, you know, take all this glasses of water from around there. Okay. But anyway, you go with the flow.
Yeah.
But great episode. And loads more episodes there, Todd. Feel free to send in more of them. Thank you very much.
Yes, it was a really good show. I enjoyed it.
Also well produced.
Very, very well done. Yes, that sounded very professional.
Introduction to said part 5. Speaking of professional, Dave.
Hang on. What about the? There was a couple of comments.
Sorry.
A couple of comments. John Cobb says, "More excellent first episode. I really enjoyed this. Hope you will do many more episodes in the future. Maybe even expanding upon how you met your future wife at age 12.
Yes,
truly crazy." To which Todd replied, "Thanks, John. More to come."
There you go. Owe me a show right there. Although a colleague of mine met her husband in national school, in their knew him the whole time from like growing up in the same class.
Yeah, wow.
There you go. Yeah, exactly.
Happens. Yeah.
In fact, that used to happen quite a lot actually, because there wasn't a whole lot of choice. What was that? The bicycle was the biggest thing for the expansion of the human gene pool.
Yeah, because you could cycle to the next village.
Yeah, exactly.
Things like, I
tell you.
My researches into my family history show this to be the case. How just living in a little village away in the field somewhere or other was pretty much isolation, you know. Everybody there and that was it, pretty much.
And that's all ahead of you now, thanks to the Brexit, Dave.
Sorry,
I had to go there. Yes. I had to go there. We were doing so well.
Let's go back to those good old days, eh?
Introduction to Learning Said, Part 5. This series is over, and this was a tough series, Dave. I followed along absolutely every step of the way, don't get me wrong, but it required an immense amount of work on your part. You should be applauded.
Well, it required a fair amount of work on the listener's part as well, because you really had to follow along as I talked about this stuff.
I don't think there would have been a way unless you were reading the show notes as you went along, especially in this episode. And I'm going, why would anyone use this option? It just begs belief.
Said's a weird thing, really. It's powerful. It is powerful, yes.
Yes.
The features of it seem to be for somebody that I'm not, and I don't know anybody who is.
Really. Yeah, I think it goes back to that, you know, one-line display thing where you needed to do things on the one-line display.
Yeah, the days of Ed before VI and stuff, I imagine.
But what was interesting to come out of that show, and you probably don't expect this, is that the manual has got you made a very interesting comment that the section examples. So you have I'll reboot my voice processing unit 1 second. You were saying that there were some of the guru stuff, yeah?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that those guru examples were the ones that were used in the manual page. Why would they do that? Why do they do that in manual pages? And it's in every manual page. If they include an example, it should be, this is how you want to replace, you know, this word with this word. That's what you're looking for in a said manual.
Yeah, I know. I found it quite amusing that they're effectively warning you off. Use it in many respects. You're better to use something like Orc or Perl, it said.
Yeah, that I get, and that I understand, and that I compliment them on doing, right? But then if you use those examples as the examples in your man page, well, that's just madness.
I don't know, because this is the GNU manual, and there was an earlier manual, which I did actually look at while I was researching this, which is even more obscure than the GNU manual. GNU manual is clearer, but I suspect they might have inherited some of the examples from the original into the GNU one, you know. So, yeah, I omitted the examples that were really, really bizarre, because I just didn't have enough time to learn what they did, you know.
Yeah,
just,
but imagine that a manual page would be giving you an introduction. If you're reading the manual, you're looking for an introduction to the thing because they say, read the manual because it's there in the manual. Okay, anyway, I'll get off that horse and move on to the next episode. Yes.
This is the entirety of said in this GNU manual. So. But just to comment that I was a bit disappointed that nobody had a go at the quiz. So
but Dave, you have to understand that it takes 2 or 3 years before people might listen to this show, especially this show.
Yes. I thought NY Bill might have a shot because I think he likes Pig Latin.
I was thinking of doing it, but I really hate Pig Latin. It goes against everything I stand for.
It's very silly. But anyway.
No, I'm a big fan of silly, but it is like pompous silly that you need to follow a particular rule. I know. Sorry, I just. I struggle with spelling at the best of times and making something deliberately. It's like people who play Scrabble really annoy me or do crosswords. If you can't spell, you're discriminating against me.
Yeah, true. Which, this was a 1920s sort of era thing, though, wasn't it? So, and it's
I suppose everybody had learned Latin at the time.
Well, it's not even that. It's just a sort of cool thing for those days, I think.
Yeah.
And it hasn't really stood the test of time very well, I think.
Yes, but it also falls under a Cockney for me as well. Just say what you mean.
Apples
say,
and pears and all that stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, handwriting. Droops argues why people should use handwriting to gain superpowers. And while I agree with Droops, and studies have proven that handwriting it down triggers different parts of your brain, I also have to say that some children struggle with the motorics necessary to write. And those children, feel very... To say that all children should write notes is a very sweeping statement, and consideration should be taken for children who cannot write and struggle with the motorics.
Yep, good point.
However, but other than that, I agree with what he's saying. I really think Droops is an inspirational teacher in many ways. But he seemed to have a comment there that he is no longer teaching at that school. I hope that's only a temporary thing.
Yes, he said I was a teacher last week. Until last week, I was a teacher, he said. So
interesting.
Yeah. But yes.
Come very close to the fountain pen episode, Dave. Still not a series, though, Dave.
Very, very close, I would say. Yeah. It needs some more, I think.
More just missed that. Yeah. Over my dead body, Dave. Well, seeing as you're doing the series classifications, I have very little to say in the matter.
Right, there'll be a Phantom Pen series before you know it. Another one. But yeah, it's an interesting take. Do you know, I found that I'm probably too detached from reality these days and hadn't quite realized how people were moving away from handwriting. I hadn't realized that it was seen as so amazingly undesirable in the way that Droops described it. Because my kids, mind you, they are in their 20s. They're in their early 20s. So maybe it's not the same population he's talking about. But they learnt to do handwriting, and they both write with pens, my son more with fountain pens, a lot. My daughter types lecture notes on her iPad, and then she takes them back to her flat and handwrites them out into a folder, because she finds that that's a great way to get the stuff into her head. So, you know.
But I was also listening to, another point just about this episode was, when you're sitting at a lecture, the last thing you should be doing is typing. The last thing you should be doing is writing notes. You should be concentrating on the lecture. And that's why I would, I hated having to do that in school, in college, because then if you were unfortunate enough to pick the wrong side where the person was writing on, then they have wiped out the board before you have a chance to take it down or write it. I was just not physically able to write fast enough. And if I was doing it now, I would just simply record the audio and when I'm in meetings, I don't take minutes. I just record the audio. I take snapshot of the whiteboards, and then I make up. I make summaries on a wiki afterwards.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just the way I do it. Different. I was always amazed at people who could, you know, write down books and books and books of stuff, and then that was it. But yeah, I would argue that the purpose of being at a lecture is to discuss the topic with the lecturer and to have that to and fro, as in the old days of. What's the point of just attending a lecture and writing down the notes? Why not just have the lectures up on YouTube and be done with it?
Well, I think that in many cases nowadays,
that's what's happening.
It is very much that the material is available other than in the lecture. I know my daughter comes away with the slides that have been shown, and the slides usually have notes on them, and you can go and read them there. And I think it's also in Moodle, some aspects of what's been going on is in the Moodle system that they use. So yeah, it's quite a bit different. But in my day, you went to lectures and you didn't get a chance to talk. In fact, they're quite keen that you didn't. You just listened and took this stuff in and then went away. So you had to write quickly.
Yes, but that, sir, is exactly what I'm saying is wrong about that. That I always had I went to a very small college, and when I was studying for my degree, I happened to be in a very, very small small class, and to the shock, and a lot of us had streamed back in from working in industry, and a lot of us had the attitude, well, okay, let me look here. Who is the one paying money to be here? Who is the one person being paid to give the lecture? And oftentimes I would just simply stop the lecture until they explained it to me before we could move on. And quite often the people who explained it to me will be other students, because they were so annoyed at me holding up the lectures that they would explain it to me in context that I would understand. And then, yes, we can move on.
Yeah. I sympathize. I think the college I went to in the 70s, late 60s or whatever it was, we were far more sort of sheep-like and just did what we were told. But I think my daughters and my son's eras, there would have been a lot more talking back, and they would have been, you know, you didn't explain that very well. Tell us, say it again, explain it better type of attitude.
Yeah, and correctly so. You're supposed to be a teacher. It's your job.
Yep. I agree.
Okay, that is going to have them coming back at me, huh? More shows coming proving how I was wrong. Yes, just go to the upload button on the HBR website and tell me why I was wrong. Okay, Brian said, great show. I'd like your ideas motivating kids to write and take notes. I wish a teacher in my life would have taken the time to teach me this important skill. You should try to be a guest on Pen Addict's podcast. I think your views would be greatly appreciated.
Jezra says, excellent episode. Just a few of my observations on writing. During National Novel Writing Month, there are quite a few participants who choose to write their novel by hand. While it's true that writing longhand is usually slower than typing, writing in shorthand can be much faster than typing.
Indeed.
And it gives a citation of when you can, a comparison, I assume.
Frank says, I've always preferred fountain pens, starting with one that belonged to my grandmother. I started using that one in high school. I currently have a relatively inexpensive Waterman with a bellows, not a cartridge. That is my favorite of the 24 or so fountain pens that I have lying around the house. Frank, I think, should do a episode. Many picked up at yard sales or resale stops. But I'm old. When we went to school, we were taught printing, which was presented as a precursor to writing. Not learning how to write as opposed to print was not an option. I agree wholeheartedly that there is a difference between taking notes and simple transcribing a lecture. Transcribing does not promote synthesis. Help me, Dave.
Synthesis.
Yeah, that's what I said. Okay. Information in any form. One is too preoccupied with taking dictation to think about what is being dictated. Exactly. That's my point. Anyway, when our own kids came home from school talking about some mysterious thing called cursive, I almost didn't know what the heck they were talking about.
Interesting. Yeah.
But here again, like we spent a good 10 minutes discussing a show about handwriting. How leash is that? Okay, Mr. X, now the chips are definitely down. A show about two different things. One was about a BBC documentary, which you saw, and the other was about the price of a Baofeng, I think is how it's pronounced, at least by the TLLTS guys. And yes, I have been looking at these devices on Amazon, and it would be highly illegal for me as a non-licensed radio amateur to even have these in my house in the Netherlands without having a Class N or a Class F license. So therefore, I do not have these in my possession at this point in time, just to be 100% clear about that.
We get it. Yeah.
But no, there is no getting it, because I will get it once I get my license, Dave. I hope you're 100% clear on that point. However, it's very good to have the manuals and more ham radio. I often wonder why there's not more ham radio on HPR.
Yeah, you would have thought it would have fitted together with the hacker ethos very well, wouldn't you? Yeah, I'm not sure why.
Sorry, you're talking without pressing the button. It does. It's like you got your electronics, you got your, you got all the different molds, you got it's science, it's engineering, it's hacking, it's blowing stuff up. What's not to like?
Yeah, absolutely. Can you hear me now?
I can indeed.
Yeah.
Interesting show, says Mike Ray. Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you. Yeah, I'm good.
Baofeng UV5R. Interesting show. I'm curious about the Baofeng. Does it talk out of the box? And are all functions and menus spoken? In other words, as a blind user, a blind op, would I be able to do everything with the radio that you can? And he's G4XBF, which is Golf 4 X-ray Bravo Foxtrot. Mike is a ham, is he?
Yes. Did he not mention that before?
I think so.
I thought he had.
Cool. Very cool. Because I'm actually considering doing doing a license in the UK, actually, rather than the Netherlands, because while I can read the novice license exams here, the F full license exams are extremely convoluted. The wording that they use is deliberately to trip you up. You know, like when the question is explained to me in simpler Dutch, I can understand it, but there's a language barrier as well as a technical barrier to get over.
Yeah. Is that easy to do it in the UK then?
Well, we'll see after the Brexit.
Yeah, once you've got your visa and everything.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, and the following day, we better speed up. Third beer podcast in beverages, Rebel Rider IPA and the Red Seal Ale or two. I like the way he describes these, what happens on your tongue and stuff. This is why I was hoping that he would do a how to do a beer show. 5150 might also do that for us.
Yeah, absolutely. We need a vocabulary, like I said.
Exactly. And finally, test driving Debian,
I think, is the way people are pronouncing it.
It's the Debian without System D.
Yep, that's right. Yep.
Very we got cool. to see Leonard Pottering talk, didn't we, Dave?
We did, and he wasn't overly impressive, really. I'm sure he's a fine and wonderful guy and everything, but his talk was not very exciting.
No. Yeah, okay. But, System D, with or without it, that is the question. I must say, whatever about Pulse Audio, I think Pulse Audio is, once you have Pulse Audio volume control, the same thing has happened with both. I don't think people mind the change. It's just they're not ready for it. There's not the tools out in there, and the manuals out in there, and the how-tos out in there to explain how you're supposed to do the stuff.
Yes, if you just drop the change in people's laps, then you're bound to get an adverse reaction.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, that was it for shows, I think. What else is on the docket tonight, Dave?
Well, we have a whole pile of comments that need us to follow up, which weren't dealt with as we went through the shows.
Okie dokie. Those will be comments up to comments 2042. So let's start with comment 5 on introduction to said part 1, which is made by Frank. And he says, part of my issue with regex is, of course, and I think this is a following up of discussion with you on regex. So I'll read that and you can read your answer. Part of my issue with regex is, of course, I don't have much need to use it. So learning it is more an intellectual pursuit. It's not like I'm a sysadmin, for example, except in my home network. That's why editing my procmail RC helps. It gives you a need to learn it. If you ever need to understand regex, I shall probably claim my title of Linux geek. He also stumbled over a question on LO and said over at regex and LibreOffice, and you replied?
I said regex and LibreOffice. As a long-term user of LibreOffice, OpenOffice before that, and StarOffice even before that, I love this feature of using regular expressions in these web processors. I've used it a lot. My boss used to give me grief about not using Microsoft Word and adhering to the, quote, corporate standards in a university. But anyway, but with a Unix box and later a Linux box on my desk, I was far more productive the way I was. In my experience, the early versions of Word were not good. The regular expression capability did appear at some point. Microsoft's version of regex is, of course, different from the more standard versions found under Unix and Linux. LibreOffice is much more conformant with the various standards, I believe.
Indeed. So the next episode is on some basic info on alarm systems, and it's
actually the parsing 2013 parsing information.
Oh, that's correct. Yeah, it was TLATU.
Yeah, and it was Louise Rodrigo saying thanks. Thanks for this article. It's very helpful for me. So that's good.
And on some basic info on alarm systems, by Schism Bill said, any particular type of things you guys would like to know about? And Frank said, I would think that some persons would be interested in knowing how prox readers and cards work. I encountered lots of misconceptions about prox cards. They send out their signal all on their own. Some did we not read these last month? I think we did.
I think when you the actual show last
that's month right, yeah.
was into June, wasn't it? So therefore these comments are actually attached to the shows. So I think the trouble is when we get to this point it's hard to know which ones have been covered and which not.
Would the date not give it away? Six.
When was the last
let me just have a quick read of some of them because I'll
the last Community News show was on the 6th. So anything beyond the 6th would be worth doing, but otherwise not.
Yeah, and any show released after the 6th would also be, we would also have discussed it in the show. So anyway, on the DSO-138 oscilloscope kit, which is cool anyway, NY Bill was commenting back, if it was a color screen, it might be the same kit. A few other DSO kits out there with non-color screens, I'm sure things can be bought cheaply in bulk. Somebody might be selling them off. Oh, no, we did. We covered about that.
I think you, yeah, I must have done everything on that one. Because I just said I'd found one and sent him the details.
We're going to have to work on this offline, Dave. Okay, shall we continue on then with the what's been happening on the mailing list?
Indeed.
Okay, HBR policy change. HTML is now the default. I don't think the world ended.
No, it's good for me.
And HBR is now on the Google Play Podcast Network, so fair enough. I was reading through the thingies about that and thinking about it, and then I was thinking, well, we're on iTunes, so fair enough.
Yeah, it sounds reasonable.
And then the next comment was just I did a mean thing and commented on your 1,000 uploads to Internet Archive. That is a fantastic achievement, Dave. Thank you very much from all the community for all the hard work you're doing there.
Oh, no problem. It's you still there? Oh yeah.
Yeah, I'm still here.
I'm getting a weird. I'm using a key. I'm using the insert key on the number pad. It's actually typing something as I do it. Hold on a second. Sorry about that.
Yep, fair enough.
No, it's okay. I've finished it. Just I'm confusing myself with my keys.
So anyway, next thing was change to series and series.php. That's actually a nice change. It looks a lot better that way.
Yes. It makes more sense. We ought to. I was thinking of making it dynamic rather than a static page, but I'll maybe not bother. But
It's not dynamic.
No, it's not dynamic.
Okay, we're going to have to make it dynamic. You could actually, offline of HPR, you quite often help me out with stuff related to Perl and just related to life in general, which I thank you very much for. That templating language that you showed me was absolutely awesome. Within one day, I was able to replace large chunks of a scripting templating thing. So maybe this might be the first... one step back. So thank you for that, Dave, by the way. The other step is about getting HPR less dependent on the database and stuff and getting more static sites out there so that we can get things put onto distributed servers so that we're not as vulnerable to DDoSes, which will be coming up later. Yeah, so maybe this might be doing the series thing might be one that we could run from a cron job or something and fill up a template or something. I don't know. Let's have a look offline about
the,
that.
The series page, series.php, is generated from a template with a bit of Perl. So it and I just regenerate it manually whenever there are changes made to the tags and summaries and things. But yeah. So there's as you say, this is not.
Yeah, it
not
could be a good thing to just start and do that out, because then we could also distribute it, a whole copy of the website into Git or onto GitHub or GitLabs or wherever, so that the website itself is available on multiple places, even Facebook or wherever. But anyway, that's by the by.
Okay.
The book club apparently have a lot of shows that they are not giving to us, so we would very much like to see them. They commented that they're desperately trying to get them, and we'll go through them. But the thing is, I think they for me, I follow the book club and I always read the books, so I'd like to be able to give the feedback. So guys, if you're recording the shows, send in the recording as soon as you've done it, and somebody else, I will happily edit it for you. And when I say edit, I mean I will put it together and submit it onto HPR. So it ain't a show unless it's on the server, and I'd like the book club to be back, because I was introduced to very good reads by that.
Yeah, good. I would like to see it too, yeah.
And Sigflup asked, were we being DOSed? And yes, we were. For 3 or 4 days, people just DOSed us. No idea why. Probably something to do with the fact that we got a little bit of notoriety due to the podcast awards thing. But the people who did it owe me a show, definitely. So it was actually quite interesting because the time I usually spend in doing admin stuff on HPR, I went and did some actual changes to the code to get a lot more pages out onto the public side and tidied up some stuff to allow us to get more stuff onto the public side. So all that is good.
Yes, and I was fiddling around with making sure that all of the upcoming shows are on the archive site. So if you want to see the stuff for that week, you could see it there.
Yeah.
At your suggestion, that was quite good.
Yeah, that's nice. So, and thanks to Josh for riding us through this whole thing. And I made some minor changes to the website as a result of the having that time. The menus, the menus were changed just so that there's upload right there on the menu page, and that points to the calendar. And we removed the show synopsis because it was often used but never correctly. So that's not an option anymore. It's just added automatically, so you can forget about that. And I updated the pages to, as you're entering the shows, there's a question mark and you'll be redirected to the exact piece on the help file where it'll tell you exactly what you're editing at any particular point in time and what that's going to be used for. For example, if you go to, we also changed the show notes format, which will bring you directly to the show notes format optional. So it tells you it's an optional thing that you can put in. Please tell us which format, if any, you're using to upload your show. And it has links to HTML5, Markdown Standard, Markdown GitHub, Flavored, Markdown Pandoc, Restructured Test, Text to Tags, Plain Text having no formatting. So if you are uploading a show and you're doing stuff in it that has formatting, so if you're doing indents or putting a minus sign in front, or you're putting 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, then that is not plain text, that is some sort of formatting. So if it is not HTML5, if it's not any form of markdown or restructured text, then go to Text to Tags, copy and paste it in there, and then make sure it comes out as something readable. Okay, thank you. Because every time we get a show, Dave manually goes and changes it and fixes it and runs it through Pandoc. Something that I was doing beforehand, but now Dave is doing that for me, which I greatly appreciate, Dave.
You're welcome.
However, it ain't an automatic process, and we want to get it to be an automatic process, Dave.
Indeed we do, yes. I have refined the thing I do so that I have sort of semi-automated, but it's... my programming skills are not sufficient to build AI to do it properly. So.
It's not possible because it's a free-form text page, and every person has different ideas of what a logical formatting is. And this is why I think we should just accept HTML5 and that be done with it. Yes, I know there should be a show and I should be doing it on HTML5. Yes, you're correct.
Okay. But yes, having today uploaded shows in the range 1,000, etc. I'm doing like sort of 10 a week or something like that. The number of awful bits of HTML in there is incredible, and
from a thousand
Internet Archive. In that range of 1,000 to onwards, there was some pretty awful HTML in there.
Yeah.
Which I think will be rejected by the Internet Archive because they run an HTML checker on it on the front end and just throw out stuff that doesn't pass it. So this is why I go to the trouble of fixing it. So getting your HTML
in the HPR database as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Cool. Thanks.
Yeah. I fix it in the HPR database, then pump it up to the Internet Archive. So
very good. Yeah. Thank you very much.
But there's quite a lot of. There's quite a lot that needs fixing, let's put it that way. So getting good HTML done is going to be quite an art.
I understand. I'm not arguing with this. I completely agree with you. But it's either that, so it's either people submit it in a standard format, or we put a WYSIWYG editor or something up, or not. Anyway, doesn't matter. We will continue on. It's our personal bugbear. We will happily take shows from anybody with or without show notes, although we do like show notes. So the next comment was, the Digest email. So it comes up as a new thread. I have a lot of unedited book club shows. Unfortunately, only Pokey has some of the recordings, so we're waiting on to get those. As soon as you do, they'll be uploaded, which is excellent. Thank you very much. And I just want to... I think, Dave, you should put out a public discussion about whether we should keep the mail digest or not, and perhaps include the email that I sent about that. Might be a good point of discussion, because
I've actually emailed everybody who is on the digest list, and several have said, "Oh, yeah, okay, I don't really need it," and have come off. But for this, you know, it's only a relatively small number of people who have replied.
Yeah, I'd also like to I'd like to make it an option when you're uploading the show that you be automatically added to the mailing list if you're not added, or that your status will be given that you're not on the mailing list or you are on the mailing list when you upload, because at that point your email address has been verified, so we can check the mailing list to see if you're on it, and if not, we can give you the option then to add you, because that's where the discussions for HPR, the policy stuff, is taken on the mailing list. It's not taken by me, it's not taken by Dave. I mean, we're on the mailing list as well, so we do have a say, but, you know, people... And actually, I want to make a comment about that, because there's in the About section, I added a section about community, free culture, and governance. And it's important to realize that HPR is community-driven, and the policies and discussions are met on the mailing list. So it's open to anybody to join that and listen to it. Now, there is another section of HPR that is not open to anybody, and it's a buddy-buddy club, and it's invite-only. And that is because, and that is the admins, the people who are allowed to log on to the server and, you know, change stuff and make sure the shows are updated. At the moment, that's myself, Dave, Josh, probably Droops, I guess, and Stankdog, who are the founders. Droops, Stankdog, and Josh are the people who decide who comes into that inner circle. And that's basically because they started the whole thing, and that Josh is the person primarily who has to go, "Well, I trust these people to be on my servers." And my servers that you could take down, as we saw with the DDoS attack, were taking down that server. Everything that was on that server is gone off the internet for 3 or 4 days. And for Josh, that means that anybody who's a paying customer is losing money because of us for that day. So everything to do with HPR is in the public. And we were talking before about making the database available as well, that you can download the actual database, all the files, the whole rsync of the folders and stuff, where the shows are and where all the images are and all that stuff. That's all available. So there's nothing secret about this. This is just this. You don't let people onto your, you know, any Tom, Dick and Harry log into your home server. So this is exactly the same thing with the goings on at HPR. Now, if you do want to contribute to HPR code and the like, anybody can go to gitlab.anhonesthost.com, and that's Josh's server. Anhonesthost.com is the business that he has, and that's basically who's hosting our shows. So if you go on there, there are two sites, the two sections. One section is the public stuff, where you know, if you're doing the Frapper map or Frapper clone or the OSM clone or anything, any of the tools that we have for processing the shows, they're all up there. And any of the code, the PHP stuff, that's used to go into the database, make this, upload the shows, and write out the pages, those have hard-coded passwords in there. So that's why they're not out. And they have access to the database. That's why they're not out. So once we work through all that stuff is going to be made public. It is not... Am I making myself clear, Dave, here?
I think so. But I have been involved with this already. So, but yeah, to me, it sounds clear.
Yeah, because and in order to be part of the community needs to know you, and you need to be contactable on the basically. If you want to help out with HPR, I need to be able to email you. I'm not asking for face-to-face, although that definitely helps. If, you know, I won't be able to get to the US, but if you've met, I don't know, 5150, or you're on some other shows, if people know who you are, then the level of trust, it's like the key of trust thing, the level of trust goes up, and then it's ultimately up to Josh to decide whether this random person on the internet is somebody that he wants to allow on to log into a service. But there are various different levels, so anybody can create an account on gitlab.anonesthost.com and get added to the public HPR code, and you can start contributing in there immediately, if not sooner. But I think that's pretty fair, actually, the whole governance thing. So, yeah.
Yeah, see, yeah, absolutely. How else would you do it? It's my feeling.
I don't think you can particularly log on to the Debian, build servers, and you know, there's a process to become a Debian developer and stuff. So fair enough. Maybe it needs more explanation as to how you become it, but it's kind of very loose and lax. I mean, how did you become involved in HPR?
I saw let's join the mailing list or something. There was or maybe it was a show. You asked for some help with generating RSS, and I came up with I sent you something, a bit of Perl that might have done it. It wasn't quite what you wanted, but then from then on you said, oh, you should go and have a look at the visible aspects of the Git. What was it? Gitorious at the time.
Yeah, it was Gitorious at the time.
And so I had a look at that and came back with some suggestions for how to do the
and they were all stuff. Wrong, Dave.
They were perfect, except you changed the goal. You moved the goalposts.
I
just
tend
lined
to do
up
that.
For a goal, and the goalposts had moved totally. But anyway, yeah. And then only then did I do a show, I think, in the November of that year when I'd started doing this sort of stuff in around the summertime. So, and that was 2012, if I remember right.
Yeah, could be. So, I mean, it probably helped I met you then later on at Og Camp.
Yes, at Og Camp, yeah, that year.
Yeah, so fair enough. But we had been communicating quite a lot before that, so it was strange then just to meet you. Changes to the website, yes. We have the explicit tag, right? And this is a question. I've brought it up, but nobody seems to be interested in having a discussion about it. We have an explicit tag on the shows, and we could put a generic, this show has been marked as explicit by the host, listener discretion is advised, at the beginning of every show. But nobody seems to have commented on that. So I'm not going to do it until people actively say that they want to do that.
Yeah. How else do you know?
Huh?
How else do you know whether it's marked explicit?
Well, you
or
don't.
Not?
And the whole point is what we could do, the explicit tag, everything on iTunes is marked as explicit. The show itself, the entire thing. So we could theoretically go and turn that off and then just put explicit on for the shows that are explicit. But what's explicit? Again, I have very strong feelings on this, and I'll read what it says on the HPR site. Under stuff you need to know, #explicit. Your show will be signaled as containing explicit content. Given that we are an open forum for free speech, we signal all our shows as explicit with the assumption that the listeners will apply the required discretion when playing the shows in public. The fact that the majority of our content is technical in nature and therefore is often considered appropriate for any audience. If you feel that your show is considered inoffensive in every region of the world, then you can signal that when you upload your show, and that most people do by switching the explicit to clean. When dealing with content that is explicit or contains material that is best suited to a mature audience, it has become traditional to include a short warning at the beginning of your show before the intro to allow listeners time to switch off the episode should they so desire. So we could do that automatic. The explicit clean thing could trigger that automatically. But the problem with this is occasionally people will say, you marked my show as explicit when it should be clean. And people will occasionally say, you marked it as clean when in fact it's explicit. So then I would need to go back and edit the shows and edit the actual content rather than just flicking the flag.
Yeah. Would a compromise be to actually show the explicit, non-explicit setting in the show notes page, do you think?
Well, it doesn't matter because it's in the RSS feed. Everything's marked as explicit. So I can, for clean shows, I can turn that off. But if I turn that off on iTunes and somebody complains, then we get chucked out of iTunes, and presumably the same for Google. So if people are okay about, to be honest, most people, it's always marked as explicit, and most people flick it to clean. So most people, I think, know exactly what they're doing, even when they get the intro and outro wrong. I've had to go back more often to switch the intro and outro, and I will never change somebody's show from explicit to clean without discussing it with them in the first place.
Okay. Yeah.
Because it's not my call. However, if there is a disagreement between the host and I will put it on the mailing list for discussion. That has never happened, by the way. But I'm just saying what's going to happen. Okay. Clinton Roy asked, he was delighted to discover there was a RSS feed for the comments, but couldn't find it on the viewer page and stuff. So I think it's fairly clear where the comments are. And there's also a tip in there for adding RSS feeds. If you go to the HBR page with the RSS feed option in Google, or using the RSS subscription extension for Google Chrome, RSS subscription extension by Google for Google Chrome, or the subscribe to or the comment RSS comment viewer in Firefox, which you need to enable, then you'll see the comments feed as well on the HBR main HBR website. Clear?
Yep. It's I don't notice this very much because I've enabled feed readers all over the place to watch the comments.
Same here.
So I just, oh, there's a comment. Well, it's usually me who's okayed it anyway, so I never get surprised by comments. So I'm not a very good judge of how this looks to the majority of people, I'm afraid.
Okay, at the podcast awards, John Culp represented us, and although he didn't get a opportunity to do so because we were pipped at the post by Hack 5. So congrats to them, and thank you very much, John, for attending. Although I do like the piece of text I came up with, which I think I'll read here. Hacker Public Radio is a community podcast that is dedicated to sharing knowledge. Anyone is free to contribute, and 270 people have already submitted 2,360 shows, usually technical, often thought-provoking, sometimes heart-moving, and occasionally outright dangerous. Any length, any topic, but always of interest to hackers. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then HBR is there to get you started. Representing HBR this evening might have been Dr. John Culp from Lafayette, Louisiana. The amount of time I spent editing that was amazing.
It's very nice. It's a lovely piece of PR stuff.
A bit too much on the contributor show thing, but I was thinking, hey, why not? It's what we do.
Yes. As you were saying earlier, something like that needs to be pumped out there in a clearer form.
Yeah, I think those motto. HBR mottos, we should just have a page of those. If you think of anything cool, if you're good at that sort of stuff, then feel free to send it to us on @HBR on all the social media networks. Then we had you talking about HBR community news. And then we had Kevin telling us that the upload was not working, which turned out to be a change in the way that Josh has been processing emails to cut down on the number of attacks we're getting. And guys, we are getting attacked all the time. You would be amazed if I told you how often we're getting attacked. It's 24/7. Literally every half a second, somebody is trying to probe the net or something. So if you discover something on the HBR website, I would really appreciate it if you email the admins first, because this is a public mailing list. It's available completely on the internet. So if you discover stuff, we really do want to hear about it. But once it goes onto the list, then the clock is ticking and I need to stop whatever it is I'm doing, get on a connection and go in and fix it. And unfortunately, at that time, I was just upgrading my phone and I had no internet connection. So there was a few hours where I was very worried as to what was going on and what people were doing. So there you go.
Yeah, nasty. Yes. Is the admin list? Yes, it is quite well documented all over the place, isn't it?
Yeah, admin at Hacker Public Radio. Even if you go into the, if you do any of the 404s or the 412ers, actually, if you go into the comments section, it says, interesting, please email admin at HPR with this comment, what you were doing. And in the, a lot of the comments, in the raw HTML, you will see comments going, you know, please email HPR. And again, the DDoS was a bit strange in that over the years, I've been contacted from time to time, a few times a year perhaps, where people have noticed stuff on the website and they've gone, I've ran this tool on your website and you're vulnerable to this, to which you just go, thank you very much, I will get it fixed, and you get it fixed. So that is not a request. That is not given permission for people to scan the website. If you do work for somebody who can scan websites, we would appreciate it if you would do it. But first, can you please contact Josh and myself, would be great, before you run that. And we can even arrange for you to have like extra access to the website if that's what's needed. We're all about identifying vulnerabilities and stuff, but please, responsible disclosure would be greatly appreciated. Thank you very much. And yeah, sorry, go on.
No, I was just going to agree with you, but it didn't seem to be necessary.
Yes, I tend to waffle on. The upload was working again, and then world map of contributors. How crazy would it be to have a world map with pins of all the contributors? Would absolutely be not crazy at all, said Clinton. So back in the day, there was a, and it took me ages to find it, it was a Frapper map, spelt in the .com way of doing things, FRAPPR.com. It's now for sale, but you could go to that website and put maps on. And now with the introduction of OSM and micro formats like geotagging and stuff, we could actually tag people where they're from as part of their profile. Absolutely no problem there. No problem there at all. And it would also be useful for things like shows where there's an event going on at a particular location. So that would be cool. But what I would like it to be, and just to be clear, anything on the HPR website itself would need to be a static image. So a picture of the map. And then when you click on it, you could go to another site, which might be javascript.hpr.com or something, or some other website. Because we don't run JavaScript on HPR. If you find JavaScript running on HPR, we would appreciate you contact the admin mailing list because it doesn't have any JavaScript running. So there you go.
Yes. I was glad you remembered Frapper, by the way.
It took me so long. I was talking all versions, and then eventually it's like domain for sale. Internet Archive had it as a domain for sale. So yeah.
Yeah, it's I think people like Linux Outlaws had it because I seem to remember putting my pin in there somewhere or other.
Yeah, it was a cool thing. Don't get me wrong, it is a pretty cool thing. But I'm surprised that there's not a clone of it for OSM. And indeed, there is. There's a JavaScript version of it. But it would be nice to. And again, it tells you the fickle websites can be. You know, even if a service is running for 10 years, Frapper had so many people, putting their pins in, and then they just disappeared when the .com bubble burst.
Yeah, I suppose it was hard to make money just offering that service if that's what they were about, I imagine, or something, yeah. I don't know.
On the other hand, you know, Wikipedia survives, so it depends what your business model is.
Yeah,
sometimes I think, you know, okay, guys, we're just going to do this because we're not going to make a living on it and hire millions of people because there's millions of people coming to our website. Sometimes you just do things because you want to do things for people. Wait, and now, as apparently tonight is all about ranting, those advertising things where you have ad blockers on, and where they go, you're running an ad blocker. Oh, you're stealing my website stuff. No, actually, we're not. If you wanted to host the ads yourself, then I would be seeing the ads. The fact is, you're linking. I'm going to your site in good faith, and you're bringing in Joe Blog from somebody else.
Yes, I just ignore those things. And if it's somebody who is very pushy about it, then I don't visit them anymore.
Yeah,
true. Personally, that's just the easiest way out of that.
I mean, we don't have advertising on HPR, but right at the bottom, there's plenty of links for anhonesthost.com. You know, they're been served up at the beginning of every episode. If you go to our shows hosted on archive.org, you get the archive.org. We do thank people. It's not that we're anti-advertising. I'm just saying, you imagine, like, if you're at home and you invite somebody in, and then all of a sudden all these random people from all over the internet start coming in and putting post-it notes on you so that they're able to identify you when you move somewhere else. That's what's happening. If it's going via you, and there's an easy way they can do this. They can fix all this by putting a proxy server on their head end and then drive all the ads to them. Then we would see all the ads. But people don't do that. Maybe I should do a show about this, perhaps.
Yeah, sounds good.
Maybe I shouldn't. But
and somebody needs to do a show about the equivalent of OpenStreetMap, Frapper on OpenStreetMap as well, actually.
Yeah, that's true, actually, yeah. Open layers, they were suggesting. I'm interested to see what happens with that. Anyway, the code, if you're interested in helping out with that project, if you've done some JavaScript stuff or if you worked with OpenStreetMap at all and put pins in it, then we're here to help from a database point of view. We can export, you know, ask people to submit that information, which of course will be voluntary, and you don't have to give your exact house. You can do like what the Dutch Army do, everybody, no matter where they are in the world, turns up at the door to the Dutch central station in Amsterdam. So you can do that. Your local, however comfortable you are about your area, either your, you know, where you live exactly, or your town, local village, your local town, your capital of the UK or capital of Europe, wherever you want to be. And again, JavaScript is not going to be forced on anybody, and this is not going to be forced on anybody. But it would be a useful thing, especially when giving out, beer reviews that you bought it at this place. There's no information being... It is useful information for people, I think.
Yeah, it would be cool.
I'm very tempted to go back and edit out all the things that I went on a rant about tonight, Dave, but... As you know, I don't edit shows. I'm usually not this ranting for all the people who are tuning in for the first time.
I didn't think it was particularly ranty, personally. We did most of the ranting about Brexit before we started recording.
We did. Super dope. There's a lot of people, just saying to Dave, there's a lot of people who work over here in the Netherlands and are in very uncertain positions. They've got families and their work contracts are, you know, there is a high level of uncertainty as to what was going on. I was saying to Dave that it'd be a bit like if Texas suddenly decided to devolve from the United States. Okay, all the people living in Texas and all the Texans, you know, are suddenly in a very weird state as far as the rest of the United States. Okay.
Yeah.
That's all I think is it.
Yeah. That's it. That's all from me anyway.
And that's all from me. Tune in tomorrow for another exciting episode of...
A Hacker.
Public.
Radio.
Radio. Join us now and share the software. You'll be free, hacker. No.
Hey, the one you did in an earlier show. Yeah. The one you did last month. That was brilliant. The one done in Georgian style or whatever it was. Very,
yeah,
very nice.
That was the origin from the Hungarian thing that he's always on about.
Yeah,
that was nice.
That's really good. We should play that more often.
Are you hearing music or is it just me?
It's me, I'm afraid. It's my phone the other side of the room.
Ah, cool.
It's going off.
All right, Dave. Have a good one.
Okay, cheers, Ken.
Bye.
You've been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by an HPR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club and is part of the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. If you have comments on today's show, please email the host directly, leave a comment on the website, or record a follow-up episode yourself. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution ShareAlike 3.0 license.